News Service Daily Newscast for October the 22nd, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. Iran and Russia have both obtained information about American voters' registrations and are trying to influence the public about the upcoming U.S. presidential election. That from CNBC, quoting national security officials. Perhaps the most puzzling aspect of the briefing was this conclusion from the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe. Ratcliffe said Iran has been sending spoofed emails designed to intimidate voters, incite unrest, and damage President Donald Trump. CNBC notes that minutes before the press conference, the Washington Post reported U.S. officials had warned state and local authorities that Iran had conducted a deceptive campaign to send threatening emails to Democratic voters while posing as members of the far-right group, the Proud Boys. There was no mention of the Proud Boys at the FBI briefing. With fireworks expected at the second presidential debate tonight, a West Virginia religious group is calling for a return to civility during the election season.
The West Virginia Council of Churches is urging candidates and citizens to avoid angry political discussions and calls to violence. Instead, Reverend Jeff Allen, the group's director, says we need to let the democratic process take place with bipartisan goodwill. He thinks President Donald Trump's aggressive rhetoric during the campaign and at the last debate does not reflect Christian values of compassion and charity.
It tends to dehumanize, it's divisive, and it's not healthy for the body politic. I think it is important to note that much of that rhetoric precedes him and will continue to pervade our body politic unless we do something now as a nation.
A Pew Research Center survey shows that more than 85% of Americans think political debate has gotten more toxic in recent years. Nearly three-quarters say elected officials should avoid using heated language because it could encourage violence. I'm Diane Bernard.
Meantime, the feds on Wednesday announced an $8.3 billion settlement with Stanford-based Purdue Pharma over the company's role in the opioid crisis, but State Attorney General there William Tong says it doesn't go far enough.
The company will plead guilty to violating laws on kickbacks to doctors and to defrauding Medicare and Medicaid. A.G. Tong says the owners, the Sackler family, should be forced out of the industry and go to jail.
It's unacceptable to let Purdue Pharma, its management executives, and the Sackler family stay in the pharmaceutical business, the opioid business, the addiction business.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
The state of Connecticut's lawsuit against Purdue Pharma will still proceed, as will thousands of other civil lawsuits filed by victims of the opioid crisis and their families. This is PNS. COVID-19 cases on the rise almost everywhere, but the share of new cases in rural Michigan counties is outpacing the new caseload in metro counties.
According to an analysis by the Daily Yonder, nearly 70% of the nation's more than 1,900 rural counties now are in the red zone, a term used by the White House Coronavirus Task Force to designate areas where the spread of the virus is out of control. Editor of the Daily Yonder, Tim Merrima, says 44% of Michigan's 57 rural counties are now on that list.
The surge in rural areas tells me that there's really no place in America that's immune or protected from the virus. Each community is at risk or will be at risk. It's just a matter of time.
Rural America had more than 82,000 new infections last week, which Merrima says is a 16% increase in the fourth consecutive week of record-breaking levels of new cases. The total number of rural residents who have tested positive for COVID-19 now tops 1 million. Mary Sherman reporting. This story was produced with original reporting from Tim Murphy and Tim Merrima for The Daily Yonder.
Idaho's Governor Brad Little has issued a proclamation declaring October to be Hunger Awareness Month. Here's Eric Tiganoff.
The Idaho Hunger Relief Task Force and Idaho Food Bank are recognizing three organizations that have gone above and beyond to serve their communities during the pandemic. Among them is the Giving Cupboard in Rigby, about 15 miles north of Idaho Falls. Their president, Naomi Schilling, says COVID-19 has presented a major challenge to communities in the area.
We had to close our building, and with the monumental efforts of our board, we turned our program on a dime, and we began a mobile pantry.
Little has approved $2.7 million in hunger relief since the pandemic began.
Finally, new research suggesting that access to emergency paid leave could help limit the spread of the coronavirus. Our Mike Mullen tells us supporters of a broader paid time off proposal say it's needed in states like Iowa, where there is no such requirement.
The study, led by Cornell University and the Swiss Economic Institute, says states with access to emergency paid leave during the crisis have seen 400 fewer COVID cases per day. Dawn Hucklebridge is with the Paid Leave for All campaign, which is demanding the U.S. Senate vote on a relief bill from the House that would extend and make bigger temporary protections. They're set to expire in December, and Hucklebridge says the time to act is now.
The United States is one of the only countries in the whole world that has no kind of national paid leave policy. That's been a crisis in the making for quite some time, but that meant that when the pandemic hit, over 33 million of us did not have access to a single guaranteed paid sick day.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported on great radio stations across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.